So we are holding on Cook Test Evolve on with Aleph, 8 lines from the top. So just to recap, we're still talking about the various dinim involved in taking a mashkan. We're talking about the dinim of what you're allowed to take in the first place, and when, in particular yesterday, we were focusing mainly on the dinim of when you have to return it. If it's something he uses by night, you have to return it to him by night, and by day, etc. We also, one of the last things we mentioned, by the way, is what's the good if you have to return it every day? What's the good of taking it in the first place? And we said there's a number of things. The Mishnah had told us one of them, which we expanded on a little bit yesterday, that it won't be considered metaltalin that belongs to the Yoshim, which you can't take from them. Normally, you can only take character from Yoshim like this. It's considered, once you took it one time as a mashkin, you're allowed to take it away from them afterwards, and you don't even have to return it every night after that. That only applies to the actual lover himself. It also accomplishes that if Shemitah comes and you don't have a prisbal written, then the loan won't be canceled. Without a mashkin, it would be canceled, and no prisbal would be canceled. With the mashkin, that helps or not. So that's what we learned in the Mishnah that Rav Shimon Gamliel says so, and there's a machlokas rishonim whether the halacha is like him or not.
But what?
Whether after 30 days you can take the mashkin and sell it to raise money for the debt, yeah. And then Tosfos, as we said, also Tosfos had pointed out the psychological thing in it that once you have a mashkin at any time that's in your possession, A, the loiver won't be able to deny the loan because you're always coming and picking it up from him every day. And number two, that after a while he'll be so embarrassed of you that he'll get his act together and pay off the loan. Okay.
Initiated in Beis Din or not?
No, well, we said it has to be initiated through Beis Din. That's what we said, yeah. And again, there's a difference whether you're taking the mashkin before, whether you're taking the mashkin at the time of the halva, or whether you're only taking it afterwards. If you're taking it at the time of the halva, most, if not all, of these dinim don't apply to that.
It doesn't have to be in Beis Din.
Then it doesn't have to be in Beis Din, and then it's a matter of fact.
You need to prove that it's a mashkin?
No, I mean, the mashkin itself is proof that you lent him money, yeah. Okay. By the way, one quick thing I meant to mention yesterday, by the way, in the story of Rav Baravua and Eliyahu HaNavi. He said Eliyahu HaNavi was in the cemetery over there. What was he doing in the cemetery? So we talked about yesterday in order to bring him to point out how poor he is, so he can take him to Gan Eden and to point, etc. I saw also Ben Yehoyada brings an interesting thing from a sefer called Medrash Talpios. He says there was a guy buried in that cemetery who had done good for Jewish people while he was alive, and now after he died, then therefore Eliyahu came to save his neshama from there and do him some and help him get into whatever, you know, into the level of Gan Eden that a chassid u'mosarim gets. So those who want to apply that to current events may do so. Those who don't need to do that either.
What do they do in Gan Eden?
There's a certain level of Gan Eden. What is Gan Eden after all? Is being close to the Shechina. So Chassidus Masoilam means that he has a neshama, as explained in Chassidus, he has a neshama from Klipas Noga, as opposed to Nefesh Abahamis from Klipas Noga, as opposed to the run of the mill goyim who have a Nefesh Abahamis from Shalosh Klipas Atmeis, as it says at the end of the first Perek of Tanya. Fine, Shalosh Klipas Atmeis, there's no good in it, so there's nothing for them in Gan Eden. A chassid u'mosarim who has a neshama from Klipas Noga, fine. That's able to derive some benefit from closeness to the Eibishter. Okay. All right. So now to our Gemara. 8 lines from the top. Cooked as vav u'manal. Turn it up on. The pasuk says lo savay al beis lavet avoyta. You're not allowed to go into the guy's house to take a mashkin, as we've learned all the dinim about that. Which means levesei iata nichnas. Which means you're not allowed to go into the house of the loiva. However, you are allowed to go into the house of an orev. If you have a guarantor for the loan, you are allowed to go into his house and take a mashkin. What the logical reason behind the difference, Mephoshim talk about different possibilities, and we're going to learn from a pasuk over here, but the logical reason behind it, Mephoshim talk about a couple of things. One of them is since he's an orev, since he's not the one who borrowed the money, it's not so embarrassing for him if you go into his house to take it. Also, we mentioned at the beginning of the sugya, there's a reason the Yerushalmi brings one reason why the Torah tells you you're not allowed to go in, is that the Torah didn't want that you, the Malva, are going to end up taking his best stuff. Well, if he's the Orev, you're not going to. Okay. And thus we find a pasuk in Mishlei that says, L'kach bigdei ki Orav zar, take his garment because he was an Orev for a stranger, for Goymer. In other words, if he's an Orev, yeah, then he voluntarily got himself into this situation. Give him to hate, you can take a mashkin from him. The Omer, and you have another pasuk that expresses a similar idea. also from Mishlei, Bni imarav toloreacha, my son, this is Shlomo Amalek talking to the Jewish people, my son, meaning my Talmud, imarav toloreacha, if you become an orev for your friend, or if takata lazar kapecha, or you gave him a handshake to agree to become an orev, for example, or nekashta b'imre picha, nekadta b'imre picha, or if you've gotten trapped up by what you said with your mouth, or you've stumbled in what came out of your mouth, which means Rashi says those two are referring to if you did anas dvarim, if you hurt the guy's feelings by saying something not nice to him. In all those cases, you're in trouble.
In other words,
Shlomo Amalek is talking about the following possibilities. A, you're an orev. B, you took on some other financial obligation. Or C and D is you did a nas dvarim. You hurt the guy's feelings by saying something to him that hurt him. In all those cases, you're in trouble with him. Also, the next verse continues, this is what you should do then, my son, to be saved. Because now you're in the hand of the other person, meaning the other guy has something against you, either financial or either financial or emotional. Go hisrapes and rehav your friend. So what does that mean? Simple meaning is hisrapes means like humble yourself. And in modern Hebrew, they use the word hitrapsut, means like abject submission, right? And rehav reyacha, the simple meaning would mean something like make your friend feel better. But here we darshan it like this. It means like this. It's talking about, again, a case where you owe him something financially, and you have something where you owe him something emotional. Im momen yesh lebiyadcha, if it's a financial obligation that you have to him, the way to get out of it is hatter loy pisas yad. Open up the palm of your hand. Give him what you owe. This is, again, since we started talking imarav tolorecha, if you're an orev, then yes, the way to get out of this is you're going to have to pay. And if that means that he's going to have to take a mashkan, so be it. The imlav, and if not, if it's not a financial obligation, then the way to deal with it is harbe olav rehim. Harbe olav rehim. We darshan urahav reecha, urahav meloshen harbe. Bring many friends to help appease him and make him and ask him mechila. Which this is in Yuma. This part of it is also brought in Yuma and the sugya over there about asking mechila from somebody in particular before Yom Kippur, but any other time. That part of the process of asking somebody mechila is you bring a bunch of friends to all come together and ask in mechila on your behalf. So yeah. Okay. So therefore, so we see from these various sukkim that being an orev, you also have an obligation which you're going to have to satisfy no matter what, and that may even mean the guy can come into your house and take a mashkin. Okay. Latzad shein.
Not a mitzvah.
It can be a mitzvah to be an orev, fine, but nevertheless, you should be aware that there's a certain obligation involved. In fact, the Mefarish Kosei Yeshuas points out on the Gemara points out that what we would realize, fine, given that you have the pasuk is saying you don't have to go into his house to take a mashkin, that it means only him, not an orev. But you would think maybe an orev should have a lesser level of responsibility than the loiva. Maybe it means you for sure can't go into his house and you can't even take a mashkin from him at all.
No,
therefore, based on these sukkim from Mishlei, we see on the contrary, go ahead and take a mashkin from him. Continues the Bragg.
The Gemara is talking derogatively about
not. Not derogatory, just saying you should realize that you've gotten yourself into a fix, which you have to deal with.
Well, of course.
Okay.
That's obvious.
Well, that's the point. In other words, be aware that the Malva can treat you even more stringently than the Loiva. The Loiva, the Torah asks him to go into his house, but he'll be able to go into your house. Okay. Look, sad Shane, he continues the Braitha. Here's another angle on it. Of what we darshan from the word elbeisei, lebeisei yata nichnas, you're not allowed to go into his house to collect on behalf of a loan, avalata nichnas l'schar katef, but you can go, for example, into his house to take a mashkin on behalf of some other debt, such as, for example, you carried a burden for him and he owes you money for that, l'schar chamor, or he rented a donkey from you, or he had you lead a donkey or whatever, and now he needs to pay you l'schar punduk, he stayed in your inn, and or not stayed in your inn, actually. Rashi says he rented you an inn, and now it's time to collect. L'schad yuknois, or you hired somebody to paint your house. In all those cases where the person owes you money, yes, you can even go into his house and collect and to take a mashkin for it. That's what we learn from Lebesa. It means only into the house of a loiva you can't come, but you can come into the house of somebody who owes you for one of these other things. Okay, finishes off the Braise Yochel Afilu Zoch Penolo Gemilva. You would think the same din applies even if you turn the debt into a milva, which is a few different explanations in Shulchan Aruch what exactly that consists of. It can consist of the one opinion, for example, is it just means writing down, adding together, summing up the whole thing, and writing it down in your account books that this person owes me X amount. Different other possibilities among Rishonim and Achronim what exactly Zoch Penolo Gemilva means, but whatever, you turned it into a milva. You would think maybe the same din applies. Therefore, the pasuk says if the other person owes you a mashas of anything, mashas means a loan. So any kind of loan, mashas maloshin, it comes from a loshin maloshin noishe, which means an amount that's owed for a loan. So any kind of owing for a loan, even if it didn't start out as a loan, even if it started out that the guy owes you money for painting his house or what have you, that you painted his house rather, whatever, and he owes you money for it or whatever, since you turned it into a loan, now it's considered mashas ma'uma and the dinim of not going into his house for a mash can apply. Whereas if you hadn't zok for all of a milva, if you kept it as you owe me for having painted your house, then you would be allowed to go in and take a mashka. Mishnah says, almana. Here's another din that we talked about at the beginning when we started talking about this the other day. The din that the Torah says also in Kiseitse that you're not allowed to take loitzachvel beged almana. You're not allowed to take the garment of an almana as a mashkin. So almana ben sheyaniya ben sheyashira ain mashkin. So whether she's poor or whether she's rich, you're not allowed to take a mashkin from her. Shenemar loitzachvel beged almana. As the pasuk says, you're not allowed to take as a mashkin the garment of an almana. There is, by the way, aside from we're going to get into the Gemara over here, Machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, taka whether it applies only to an Amono who's poor or not, there's also a good deal of discussion among, well, our Mishnah says it doesn't make a difference, but we're going to see in the Gemara, there's a Machlokas Tanoim on that. But on top of that, there's some other interesting Machlokas in. For example, does it apply only to an Amono? So the Shach says yes, because an Amono is more brokenhearted than anyone else. On the other hand, the Smeh says it can also include a woman who's divorced. And the Taz goes still further, and he says it can even include a woman who's never been married.
But it's not Daraisa, then.
No, according to them, it would be Daraisa also. Both the Smeh and the Taz would say, the vote is, the Pasuk is talking about a woman who's living on her own. Usually, in those days, the standard case when a woman is living on her own would be when she's an Amona. But the same thing, according to the Smeh, would be if she's divorced. And the same thing, according to the Taz, even if she was never married. The fact is, normally, in those days, fine, a woman didn't usually live alone before she was married. She usually lived in her father's house and afterwards in her husband's house. But if it happens, then nevertheless, yeah. For reasons which we'll see in the Gemara, about what the reason, we're going to discuss the reason behind this mitzvah. Okay, in Shulchan Aruch it brings only the first two opinions, that it applies to an almana and some say to a grusha. The Alter Rebbe in Hilchos Halva doesn't bring the Taz's opinion about it applying to a penuria at all. There's also a different machlokas for showing him, does it only apply to a beged? Does it maybe apply to other objects that you might take from her as well? Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, almana ben shi yanira ben shi yashira, and almana, whether she's poor or rich, ain mamashkin, and it's a divrei Rabbi Yehuda. You're not allowed to take a mashkin from her, so says Rabbi Yehuda. That's our mission. Rav Shimon omer, ashira mamashkin, and it's aniya ain mamashkin, and it's a. Rav Shimon says, no, if she's poor, you're taka not allowed to take a mashkin from her. But if she's rich, you are allowed to. Why? Why shouldn't you take that from a poor one? Because you have to return her the object, as we said. If it was a pillow, you have to return it to her every night. If it was clothing, you have to return it to her every day, etc. So what's going to happen? Every day you're going back and forth to her house. After a while, the neighbors are going to start talking. What's this guy going and visiting her twice a day for? Who knows what's going on over there. Which, by the way, the Rambam points out. The Rambam points out in Pirush Mishnayos. Rabbi Yehuda might answer to that. Fine, but even if she's an Ashira, even if you're only taking the mashkin as a one-time thing, nevertheless, it may happen occasionally that you have to come to her in order for her to take care of the mashkin, do something to it to prevent it from getting damaged or whatever. You're still going to have the same, but it may not be as often. It won't be twice a day, but still, there's going to be the possibility of it.
Can you send someone to take
it? You could, but nevertheless, it's fine. And if you send the shliach based in, same problem. After a while, you know, people are going to start suspecting. Tosfos, by the way, has a long discussion over here also about a different question. We learned at the beginning a couple of days ago that even a shliach beis din is only allowed to grab something from the person in the street, but not actually go into his house unless he brings something out. Does the same din apply to an almana or not? Tosfos has a long discussion about it over here. Okay. Onward. So, let's ask like this. Does that mean, then, that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't go to try and darshan the reason behind the mitzvah and see whether that limits the application of the mitzvah, and Rabbi Shimon does, because that's what Rabbi Shimon seems to be saying. Even though the pasuk doesn't specify that it only applies to an amana, and the pasuk certainly doesn't say anything about that it'll cause a shame Rabbi Shkenetea, nevertheless, Rabbi Shimon deduces that from the pasuk, because why else would it, he says, why else would the Torah limit you from taking beged amana if it weren't for that issue? Whereas Rabbi Yehuda apparently disagrees with that. He says the pasuk says that means the blanket statement, that's it. The problem is, we find that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold exactly the other way around in a different case. The Tanya, or it's not really, it's supposed to be at the Mishnah and Sanhedrin. The pasuk says, "V'lo yagel lo nashim," that a king, a Jewish king, is not allowed to have too many wives. 18 wives is the maximum.
So what about Shlomo?
He was over on it. He figured on the Arba v'lo yosef, the famous thing. He figured, I'll have many wives, and I won't turn away from the Eibishter, and he ended up being wrong. Anyway, we'll learn that. We'll learn more about that tonight. That's a shame. Anyway, so he's not allowed to have more than 18. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a marbahu uvat shelo yehu mesiris aslibay. Rabbi Yehuda says the pasuk says like this: Lo yagol lenashim v'lo yosel b'vavi. He shouldn't have many wives. His heart shouldn't turn away from Eidishtim. So Rabbi Yehuda says, "Taima dekra." The pasuk is implying that the only problem with too many wives is he'll turn away from Eidishtim. Fine, if they're not going to turn him away, wow. if they're good sidkonius or whatever, then he's allowed.
And that applies to our case.
Well, wait, Rabbi Shimon. So it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is dovish time of the Kura. It sounds like Rabbi Yehuda is saying the only reason for the mitzvah is v'lo yosel b'vava. So if it's not yosel b'vava, then there's no problem. Yeah, Rabbi Shimon. I feel achas v'misidah liba harei l'zelo yisena. Rabbi Shimon says even if he has one wife who turns his heart away from the Eivishter, who convinces him to go in the wrong derech, harei z'lo yisena, then he's not allowed to marry her. Im kein matzah. So in other words, you don't need to say only if there's 18. The pasuk doesn't need to tell us only if there's 18. Im kein matzah amad leimach v'lo yagol noshim. So what does the pasuk mean by saying he should not have too many wives? Afilu kavigayel. Even if there's 18, even if all these 18 wives are tzidkonius like Avigayel. And Avigayel, in fact, Taka, prevented David from making a major mistake in halacha, and then going and killing Novel for the whole story over there in Shmuel Aleph, where this guy Novel, this rich guy, talked chutzpahdik to David's messengers, didn't want to help them with food. It was right before Yom Tov too, and then David figures the guy's a murder malchus, we got to kill him, and he gets all his people together and sets off to attack them. Abigail, Novel's wife, meets him on the way, and among other things, she explains to him, as the Gemara tells us in Megillah, that she explains to him, look, you're not de facto king yet. You are de jure king because you've been anointed, but you're not de facto because Shaul's still alive. You can't consider him murder malchus. And David agreed. So even an Abigail, who's going to keep him from doing the wrong thing, Rabbi Shimon says no. The pasuk is saying you're not even allowed to have more than 18 of those.
So wait a minute. A king who's anointed is a king.
We've talked about this before. There's de facto and there's de jure. Are his coins accepted in the realm? David wasn't at that stage yet. Shaul is still alive and he's still ruling. David is de jure king because he was nimshach already, but he's not practically speaking serving as king yet. The people haven't accepted him yet. Oh, that was what Abigail pointed out to him, and he agreed.
That's
the halacha.
That's
okay. Lomazogin, yeah, he's not yet president. Tomorrow he will be, but yeah, right now, yeah, okay. Maybe, I don't know if that's an exact comparison, but okay, Lomazogin, fine. Anyway, the point is then that we see Rav Shimon doesn't seem to worry about time or dekorah. Doesn't matter whether yosel levavai or not. 18 is the maximum. Whether they're going to be yosel levavai or not. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is Dordish time of the Kura. And here it's the other way around. So that's we have to figure out how to reconcile it. The answer is, La'olam Rabbi Yehuda lo Dordish time of the Kura. No, we have to say like this. Usually it's true Rabbi Yehuda is not Dordish time of the Kura. He says, never mind, the Torah says a mitzvah, that's it, it is what it is, that's an absolute thing. The shiny hacha, the mefradash Kura, v'layav v'laynoshim v'layosu. Here it's different. The Torah itself gives an explicit reason. That he shouldn't have too many wives, that his heart shouldn't turn away. Which means Rabbi Yehuda understands it as it's a causal thing. My time lo yagol lo noshim b'shum d'lo yosu. Why shouldn't he have too many wives? Because that will make his heart turn away from Eved. But if they're not going to, if they're all tzidkonius, then let him marry more than 18.
But that's just because of Prophet.
Only because the Pasuk itself says a reason, and Rabbi Hoda figures the reason, it's not two separate statements in the Pasuk, it's one explaining the other. Why am I giving this mitzvah? Because it'll have these consequences.
Why does Torah feel the need to explain this Pasuk and not
others? Okay, so that's the famous thing. This is the mistake that Shlomo HaMelech made. He figured, somewhat like Rabbi Hoda does, that the Pasuk is saying that the problem of marrying too many wives is that it'll lead to v'loyaser l'vavoy, but I'm immune to that. I won't. I need arba v'loyaser. And he ended up marrying his 300 wives, 700 concubines, or whatever, or the other way around, whatever it was. And Taka did, and it was yaser l'vavoy towards the end of his life. His wife started worshipping Avodah Zarah, and he didn't prevent them. So, yeah. Anyway. V'Rav Shimon, whereas Rav Shimon would answer to that, no. Given that usually we're always going to darshan the reason, we're always going to look for the reason behind the mitzvah and see whether that limits the applicability of it. Therefore, let the pasuk only say don't have too many wives without giving a reason. So we would automatically understand what the problem with too many wives is, that he'll be distracted from serving the Eibishter. Not pritzes so much, but he'll be too fakipt in his wives and not enough in avodas Hashem. Therefore, you have to ask. Rav Shimon says lo yosser because of Rahman Olamali. So why does the Torah feel the need to write lo yosser over here? Is to teach us afilo achas mesiras libeharei haloisana. That not like you, Rabbi Yehuda, are saying that it's one leads to the other. It's two different things over here. Number one, lo yavel enoshim. Absolutely, no exceptions. Never more than 18. Number two, if there's any of them that are going to be meiser eslavavay, that are going to distract him or turn him away from serving the Eibishter, then they are off limits even if they're fewer than 18.
Why do we say 18 is...
We darshan it from Pasuk and Shmuel Beis. We darshan it from Pasuk over there after the whole story of Bathsheba, and Nosson HaNavi comes to him and says, be ma'afah, people are kahena v'chayna, we'll learn when we get to Sanhedrin later this year, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about how exactly we learn, we'll see the different opinions also, but the halacha is 18. Anyway, so the bottom line is, therefore, returning to our case of the Almana, the Pasuk doesn't say any reason behind this thing of the Almana. Therefore, Rav Shimon figures, normally, we always have to be Dodesh Taima Dekra. Therefore, let's look at the reason. Why would the Torah tell us you can't take a beggared Almana as opposed to from anybody else? Must be because the problem of Masi Hashem Rabbi Shein is there. Therefore, if that doesn't apply, if she's rich, no problem. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, we are not Dirdish Taima Dekra. When the Torah says a mitzvah, it's across the board. Therefore, rich or poor, doesn't matter, you can't do it.
The
halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Incidentally, Tosfos points out elsewhere, this whole machlokes is about Dashin and Taima Dekra is only when it affects the actual halacha. When it doesn't affect the actual applicability of the halacha, sure, everybody agrees we should try to find reasons behind the mitzvah. The whole Sefer HaChinuch is written on that basis. He tries to find a logical underpinning behind every mitzvah. Ultimately, I mean, we do them because they're the rotzen of the Eibishter, but still, you want to try to find as much as possible reasons that appeal to you, that make it more that you learn a lesson in avodah from it, and it appeals to you more, etc. Mishnah says, another din that we have as far as the dinim of taking a mashkin, which again we talked about briefly at the beginning, is yet another one in Kisete. The Torah says that you're not allowed to take kelim sha'osim ban ochel nefesh as a pledge. Lo yachvo v'rechayim v'rochev is the expression in the pasuk. So now we're going to deal with that. Mishnah says, achoy v'losa rechayim ovim b'shem lo yisese. If you take as a mashkin a millstone, then you're over on a lo yisese. V'chayev mishum shnei kelim. And in fact, actually, yuchayev, a millstone consists of two parts. You have the lower stone and you have the upper stone that turns around over it, and between them the grain gets crushed. So if you take the two of them, then yuchayev mitzad that you took two different kelim shoysen by mechon nefesh. As opposed to one, yeah. Shenemel lo yachvo rechayim v'rochav. As the pasuk says, you should not take as a mashkin a rechayim, which is the lower stone, v'rochav, or the upper stone. V'loy rechayim v'rochav bovad omru, and this doesn't just apply to rechayim v'rechev, ela kol davar sha'osim v'ochel nefesh. It applies to any kalim that are used for ochel nefesh, shenema ki nefesh hu chogel. The pasuk finishes off, because if you do that, then you're taking a nefesh, you're taking a person's life as a mashkin. There is a good deal of argument among the Rishonim what exactly is considered davar sha'osim v'ochel nefesh. So first of all, there's a part of it affects the Gemara that we're going to see later on Kuf Tzayin. First of all, you asked me the other day, for example, about a silver becher. First, everybody agrees, first of all, that kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh only applies to something which is actually used for preparing food. Therefore, a cup is out. You only pour ready-made liquid into there. So therefore, a cup would definitely not be considered
false.
So, no, well, nine, yeah, I guess because you cut up the food with them. Yeah. But there is a machlokas rishonim. Does it also include, for example, we talked about in connection with the other day, as far as a plow, does it also include, for example, a plow or the animals that are used for the plowing? Are they considered kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh? Or maybe not. Maybe they're just a prerequisite but they're not actually used with the food itself. For example, Tosfos says later on, that let's say cows that are used for plowing would not be considered kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh. But for example, if you have cows that are used to thresh grain, that would be where they're going to thresh toasted grain, for example, as we learned previously about the dinim of kasima. That would be considered kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh because the grain is right away ready to eat after they finish with it. And then you have rishonim who go in the other direction. They say that kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh can even include things that you use, kelim that you use for your panacha. So, for example, again, in the Gemara, we're going to talk about, for example, a pair of scissors. Do we mean a pair of scissors that are used, let's say, by a tailor? Or do we mean, Tosfos says over there, that it may mean a pair of scissors that are used for cutting the leaves off vegetables? No.
If
he did it by himself, then he's over on that as well. He's not allowed to also, but even let's say he went in and took a mashkin illegally. There is actually a machlokas rishonim. Hold on. First of all, there is a machlokas rishonim. What about if the person voluntarily brings him out l'chaim barachav? Is he allowed to or not? That's one angle of it. There's different opinions about that. There's also, does this din of Rechaim Barachav apply when you're taking the mashkin b'shas alva, or does it only apply shaloi b'shas alva? That is a machlokas between the Rambam and everybody else. B'shas alva. If I remember correctly, according to the Rambam, you're over even b'shas alva, and according to everybody else, not. Although I may have that backwards.
Even though he gives him
voluntarily and everything, it's still kelim shayosim b'nechal nefesh. Yeah. But besides that also, so if we were to take it illegally, we would say he took it, it's still considered a mashkin, but he was over on the mitzvah of going into the guy's house and taking a mashkin, and he's also over on taking Rechaim Barachim. So, Gemara says, Omer Rapuna, Chover Rechaim Loikashtayim, if a person takes as a mashkin, just the Rechaim, just the lower stone, Loikashtayim, he gets two malchus. Number one, Mishum Rechaim, and number two, Mishum Ki Nefesh Uchoyvel. Number one, because he took Rechaim, and the Pasuk says, Layako Rechaim. And number two, because the Pasuk says, Ki Nefesh Uchoyvel, which, as we said in the Mishnah, includes anything, Sha'osim Ba'anechel Nefesh, which includes millstones. So therefore, he was over on two Isurim. Tosfos talks about, by the way, are we talking about, usually it would be a lava nitik la'ese. If you took it, then you just have to return it. What's the issue? So Tosfos talks about that maybe we're talking about, for example, that you broke it, or otherwise it was destroyed, and therefore you don't have the possibility of returning it. There's different other possibilities that Rishonim and Mefarshim and Rambam and so forth bring up various permutations of that. For example, if the thing itself was damaged, are you yotze by returning the value of it, or maybe not? That comes into play often. So there's different opinions on the subject. Okay. So if you took Rechaim, you get two malchus. Rechaim v'rechav loike sholish. If you were to take and the same thing, if you were to take only the rechav, you'd get double malchus. Rechaim v'rechav loike sholish. But if you were to take the rechaim and the rechav, both stones, then you would get three malchus. Mishum rechaim v'rechav or mishum kinefesh uchayvo. That's reported. No, if you take the rechayim by itself, you only get one malchus, because we don't count kinefesh uchayvel, as we'll see in a minute. Berechev loika achas, if you only took the rechev, you also only get one malchus for being over on loyakol rechev. Rechayim v'rechev loika shtayim, if you took both, then you're going to be chayev two malchus, because loyakol rechayim and v'rechev. What about kinefesh uchayvel? What about that last part of the pasuk? He says, l'shav dvorim hu da'asa. That doesn't come to include an extra iser on top of Rechaim Varechad. It comes to include all the other kinds of kelim, shayotzim b'nechal nefesh. Fork, knives, whatever. Yeah. So, qu- question is, Lema Abaye, now we have a similar machlokas. We have a similar machlokas in a number of places in Shas on related to the concept of lav shebeklolos. So lav shebeklolos includes a couple of different things. It includes sometimes you have a lot, sometimes you have where the Torah says don't do something, and it includes a number of different isurim in those words. A classic example is the Torah tells us in Kedoshim lo seichu al adam, and it includes about half a dozen different things. It includes it's a warning to the ben sora remota, don't eat in a way that's going to lead to your death. It includes the idea that the Sanhedrin shouldn't eat on the day when they judge a death penalty case. It includes the you're not allowed to eat the meat before the blood of a korban before the blood is sprinkled on the mizbeach. It includes a number of different things are included in it. It also includes that you shouldn't eat before davening, like don't eat before you daven for your own blood. Anyway, that's one example of lav. You eat a light thing so that you'll be able to concentrate on davening. You don't have a full breakfast.
Mizanus, you can or you cannot?
Again, if that's what you need in order to concentrate on davening, then fine. But yeah, as a famous thing in Hayyim, right? You don't want to daven for the sake of eating. You want to eat for the sake of davening. Okay. Anyway, that's one example of lav shebeklolos. A different example of lav shebeklolos is the Torah tells. Sometimes the Torah will tell us, "Don't do this, this, and this." Is that considered a lav shebeklolos? Many times we say yes. On the other hand, there are actually times when we say no. There are actually times when we say we learned about it. For example, in Nazir, we had about the case of a Nazir over there, where the Torah says mechatsanim vadzog lo yochel, but he's not allowed to eat. He's not allowed to eat grape seeds or grape peels. Is that a lav shebeklolos or not? Because you have one loy soichel that goes on two things, zog and chartzon.
And a lav shebeklolos means?
A lav shebeklolos then would mean one lav that includes a few different details in it. So sometimes we do consider them separate lavim. There's, for example, the Torah tells us in Parshas Emor, that where about the dinim of chodosh, the Torah mentions, the lechem bekoli v'karmel loy soichel, you're not allowed to eat from chodosh bread or toasted grain or fresh grain. And the Gemara explains in Menachos that actually we learn, the Gemara Darshans over there, that each of them is actually considered a separate lav of its own.
Not lav.
So it's not a lav shebeklolos. You actually, if you were to eat bread and toasted grain and fresh grain of chodosh, you would get three malchus.
So how do you differentiate between?
So how do you differentiate? So the Rambam has a long discussion about it in Sefer HaMitzvot in the Shoreshim. Basically, it depends on what Torah Shabbat Peh tells us. It depends on how we darshan it from the psukim. In the case of lechem v'koli v'karmel, the Gemara explains over there that you didn't really need to say koli. You could have said lechem and karmel, and we would have understood koli is included as well. So therefore, the reason why it's put in there is to tell us that each of them is a thing of its own. But we don't always say that. Tosfos also makes a different distinction over here in one of the long Tosfos in over here. We have, for example, a pasuk that says, kochelev shur v'ketev v'eiz lo sechelev. You know, it's the chelev of an ox, or a sheep or a goat. Is that considered a lav shebeklolos? So Tosfos says, yes, actually, because it's all chelev. Chelev is chelev. It comes from different animals, fine, but it's all chelev. As opposed to, for example, zog and chartanim by a nazir, they are two different things. One's peels, one's the seed. So therefore, that also goes, and that also factors into the question of lav shebeklolos. Right. So now Abaye and Rava argue in a number of places in Shas, and here we're going to be discussing it, about this concept of lav shebeklolos. On the face of it, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, who are arguing over the applicability of Kinefesh Uchayel, seem to be covering the same ground. So, Lema, Abaye and Rava, before the Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, should we say that Abaye and Rava are recapitulating the exact same machlokas of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda? D'Amar Rava, because here is an example where we talk about lav shebeklolos, Rava says as follows, and Torah tells us by the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to eat it no umavushal. Not allowed to eat it, which means rare, half cooked, or cooked in water. It has to be roasted. So, Amar Rava, Ochal no lokeshtayim. If you eat the Korban Pesach no, rare, then you get two malchus. Number one, mishum no, and number two, mishum kim tliyesh. One because you ate it half cooked, and one because the Torah tells us you should only eat it roasted. Mavushal like a shtayim, same thing, mishum mavushal, mishum kim tliyesh. No mavushal like a shalosh. If you were to eat the Korban Pesach half roasted as well as cooked in water, then you would get three malchus. Mishum na, or mishum mavushal, or mishum leitech lenu kim tliyesh. That's Rava. and Abaye Omer, Ein Loiken on Lav Shebeklolos. Abaye says, no, you don't get Malkus for Lav Shebeklolos, so therefore you can't get Malkus for Lois of Ki Im Tzliyesh, because Ki Im Tzliyesh is an example of a Lav Shebeklolos. It's one statement that includes several different things in it. It includes not Nod, it includes not Mavushal. Therefore, you can't add it to the other ones. Therefore, he would say that you only get, if you ate it no, you'd get one mouth. If you ate it mavushal, you'd get one. And if you ate it no mavushal, you'd get two, but not three, like Rava says. So that sounds like the same machlokas between Rav Yehuda and Rav Hona. I think Gemara brings up over there in Pesachim another possibility. Maybe Abaye would say that if you ate it, maybe Abaye would say you don't get malchus at all because the whole thing is a lav shebeklolos. Because maybe we would say that a lav to get malchus has to be where the Torah says don't do one thing, not don't do this or this. No mavushal might. Okay, now here we're not getting into that. Here we're going according to the version that at least you would get malchus for each one individually. So lema Abaye drama kerav Yehuda v'rava drama kerav Huna. Sounds like then Abaye is saying the same thing as Rav Yehuda, just as Rav Yehuda said over here that you would get one malchus for the rechayim, one for the resev, and no more. And even if you did both of them, you'd only get two malchus. Abaye is saying the same thing as far as Noam Urshul. And Rav Huna, who said you get three for rechayim v'resev, would be saying the same thing as Rava. The answer is Amalach Rava, I'm not the Amri Afilik Rav Yehuda. No, Rava can answer you. No, what I'm saying could go even according to Rav Huna. Even though in the case of Rechaim Barachem of our Mishnah, Rav Yehuda would say you get only twice Malkus for the Rechaim and for the Rochev, but when it comes to the Korban Pesach, you could get three Malkus. What's the difference?
You could
if you eat it Na and Mavushal. Because then you have Na, Mavushal, and Ki'im Tzliyesh. What's the difference? Ad kam l'kamer Rav Yehuda hosam ela d'kinefesh u'choyvel loy mashmei rechayim v'rochev. Because in this case, Rav Yehuda says, the words kinefesh u'choyvel are not referring to the rechayim v'rochev. They are meant to include all kinds of other things, any other keli sha'otin v'anech u'nefesh. It's not mashmei that it means only rechayim v'rochev. Hilkach l'shav varim hudasa. Therefore, necessarily, it must be coming to include other things. Therefore, if you take the Rechaim Barachav, you have not been over on Kinefesh Uchayvel. Therefore, he says only twice. Aval Hocha, Kiim Tzliyesh Lamai Asa. But over here, what else would Kiim Tzliyesh come to include? What other possibilities do you have besides for it being Na or Mavushal? There's no other way of preparing the Korban Pesach. Na means half roasted.
Half roasted, right.
Mavushal Bamoyim means cooked in water.
Right.
What other ways are there of preparing the meat for eating? There is no other way on the face of it, Rashi says.
Spices
you're allowed to add, actually, but no, we're talking about the basic question. You have to apply heat. You have to apply heat to the meat in order to make it edible.
Right.
You can apply heat by you apply it only partially, in a sense, not fully roasted. You can put it in water and cook it that way, and then you can roast it in fire. Those are the only three possibilities, basically. So therefore, Ki'im Tzliyesh can't be coming to add anything else. Shmamin alav. Therefore, Rav says, of necessity, it must be coming to add an extra lav. Even Rav Yehuda, Rav is saying, even Rav Yehuda would have to agree with that.
What's the extra lav?
That's the extra lav. In other words, that you get two lavim for eating it na, two for eating it mavushal, and if you did na mavushal and you got one hatsura for everything, then you'd get three malchus. Tosfos actually points out, by the way, conceivably you could get four, also in the case of rechayim barachim. If you took the rechayim and they warn you don't take it, there's two malchus involved, and you took the rechav and they told you there's two malchus involved, then you'd get four. But we're talking about if you took the rechayim barachim together with one hatsura, then you'd get two according to Rav Yehuda and three according to Rav Hona. And so Rava is saying, in the case of the Korban Pesach, even Rav Yehuda might agree that when it comes to Noam Ugoshul, you would in fact get three malchus.
The third is for
violating Ki'im Tzliyesh, that you didn't eat it roasted in fire. Okay. V'abaye Amalach, whereas Abaye would say no, I'm not the Amri Afilu Rav Huna. No, what I'm saying that you only get two malchus in the case of the Korban Pesach, that could work even according to Rav Huna, who says that by the Rechaim Barachav you get three malchus. Because Ad Kam like Amar Rav Huna Hasam Ela B'Kinefesh Uchoyvo Yiseiru. Rav Huna takes the view that the words Kinefesh Uchoyvo is extra. It's available to teach us another lav, and since now the Torah could have just said The Torah could have just said, L'yachver d'chaim v'rochev, or any other, Kalim Shoyz v'nei chomefesh. By saying, ki nefesh u'choyvel, Rav Huna says, that's a generic statement which also includes r'chaim v'rochev. R'chaim v'rochev is also ki nefesh u'choyvel. They are Kalim Shoyz v'nei chomefesh. Therefore, kiven v'yakirahu, so since it's extra, shadya r'chaim v'rochev, then it can also equally well include the r'chaim v'rochev. Whereas Rav Huna would take the view, Abaya says, that when it comes to the words kim tliyesh, it's not extra. We actually need it. Not like you, Rava, are saying that it's available and therefore we can use it to teach us an extra lav. No, there's actually a din that we learn from those words, kim tliyesh. Because we need it in order to teach us the din that it says in the following braisa. Only at the time when you have the mitzvah to eat the korban Pesach roasted, namely Pesach night, only at that time do you have the lav of don't eat it, no, mevushal. But outside of that time, you're not over. Meaning, if you were to take the korban Pesach and half roast it or cook it in water and eat it on Erev Pesach, let's say, you wouldn't be over on these lavin. You're over on the mitzvah saseh that you're supposed to eat at Pesach night, but you don't get malchus for being over on a mitzvah saseh. But how do we know that? Only because it says together in the pasuk, al teichlum menonah uvashim uvashim b'moyim ki im tliyesh. At the time when you're supposed to be eating at tliyesh, Pesach night is when you could be over on no uvashim.
So it could still go.
So therefore, so you need that for that limud. You can't have it available to teach us an extra lav. Therefore, Abaya says, Rav Huna would agree in the case of the Korban Pesach that you can't have more than two malchus, one for no, one for mevushal, and that's it. Tanya Kava said to Rav Yehuda, we learn a braisa that draws according to Rav Yehuda. Chaval zug shal saparim, if you took as a mashka and a pair of scissors of saparim. Now, here's where we get into. On the face of it, saparim means barbers, which in that case, then, how is that Kalim Shosin Manech HaNefesh? Again, according to the Rishonim, the Ran, and others who say that includes things you use for malacha to earn a living, then yes, then that means exactly what it sounds like. Tosfos would say that it means that it doesn't mean a barber's scissors. It means zug shal misparayim, which means a pair of scissors that are used to cut off leaves off of vegetables. In which case, it's directly used for eichel nefesh.
But it's safarim, not misparayim.
He would have his gears of misparayim. Anyway, this zug shal misparayim, it's a pair of scissors. Now each one, now you know, it's not like most scissors nowadays come, you know, pre put together from the factory, and you know you don't take them apart. The scissors we're talking about over here are meant to be they can be taken apart into two separate pieces, but then you put them together when you need to use them. So therefore they're the same kind of thing as the rechayim v'rochev. They're two kalim that are used together to do one malacha. So if you take such a thing as a mashkin, the tzemet shel poros, or you take a pair of oxen and the yoke that goes with them. So Rashi gives two explanations. One is that you're talking about you have the oxen and you have the yoke. Or the other explanation Rashi says is the yoke itself may have been made out of two pieces, like the scissors. Anyway, again,
the yoke is made of one piece. It's true.
Then it would be considered one keli. But then the cows would have to be the other one. Again, Tosfos argues with that and says cows can't be considered a keli anyway. It would have to be like Rashi's second explanation that it means a yoke that's made out of two pieces, where you need both pieces in order to do the work.
And then it counts as two.
So yochol lo yehechay v'alachas. So the Braita says, You would think you only chayev one malchus. Tamad loyma lo yachver rechayim v'rochev. That is why the pasuk says don't take as a mashkin rechayim v'rochev. Ma rechayim v'rochev shen yichodim. Just like what's special about rechayim v'rochev? They are shnei kelim v'oisim malacha achas. They're two kelim which together do one malacha. V'chayev al zebek ne'asmei v'al zebek ne'asmei. And you chayev for taking each one individually. Af kol dvarim shen shnei kelim yichodim v'oisim malacha achas. Chayev al zebek ne'asmei v'al zebek ne'asmei. I skipped a couple of lines over here, didn't I? No, one second. I skipped a couple of lines over here, sorry. Let's start over again. Tani kavaseh derabihoda. Yeah, there are two brises over here. Yeah. Number one, chavol zog shal saparim v'tzemet shal paris. If you took as a mashkan the pair of scissors or the pair of oxen or the yoke or whatever chayev shtayim, then you I skipped that one chayev shtayim, then you chayev two malchus zeba asme v'zeba asme and chayev alachas. Whereas if you took each one individually, you only chayev one. Now, Rashi says that bright, if you take individually, if you take the one half of the scissors as a mashkin, right, then you chayev one malchus.
Right.
Now, Rashi says that brisa is not enough all by itself to be a proof for Rabbi Yehuda. Because, fine, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the maximum is two malchus. You don't necessarily see from this brisa the maximum is two malchus. You're saying you get malchus for one and for the other. Lav dafka, maybe it means you get a third one also for kinefesh or klevel. So therefore we need the second braisa as well. Which goes, v'tanya vidach, we learn in another braisa, chavol zug shal saparim v'tzemet shal paris, if you took as a mashkin a pair of scissors or the pair of oxen, yachol lo yehei chayv alachat, you would think you only chayv one malchus, tamad loyma lo yachol rechayim barachav, therefore the pasuk says, don't take as a mashkin the rechayim barachav, Ma rechayim v'rechav shein yichodin. What's unique about rechayim v'rechav is that they have shnei kelim v'otzim malacha achas. They're two kelim which work together to do one malacha, like scissors. V'chayiv al zeb v'fnatzim v'al zeb v'fnatzim. And yichayiv for either one individually. Ach kol dvarim shein shnei kelim yichodin v'otzim malacha achas. Chayiv al zeb v'fnatzim v'al zeb v'fnatzim. Then yichayiv for each one individually. So Rashi says like this, actually. The second braisa is not, that's the thing. The second braisa is not enough. Sorry, I got it wrong. The second braisa is not enough to establish that what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, that the maximum you could get is two malchus. The second braisa is only telling us if you take one half of it, or you take the other half of it, you're chayav for each one individually. That's not to say, though, you might not be chayav a third malchus.
Right.
That is why the Gemara first brought the first braisa that says chayev shtayim, meaning you chayev two, we're clear,
more.
Two and not more than that. So therefore, Rashi says you needed two braisas together in order to prove the point.
The first one is a minimum you have two.
The first one tells us two, but it doesn't tell us why you're getting two malchus, and the second one clarifies
maximum
that it's maximum of two, even if you take both of them. Yeah. Okay. Tosfos argues with that and.
Rashi
says that. Yeah. Tosfos argues with that and says, no, the girsa should not be v'tanya idach, but rather tanya idach. The first braisa alone is enough to prove Rabbi Yehuda's point. The second one, by the way, meaning it's never more than two.
How do we prove that for the first
Because the first one said that you get two malchus. If you took the whole pair of scissors, then you get two malchus. Then, by the way, the Gemara is bringing in another braisa to clarify more of the details, but not necessarily to bring another proof to Rabbi Yehuda.
That's Tosfos.
Also, Rishonim point out, after all, I mean, you know, because, given that uncertainty of what the Brises are saying, we can't say that these Brises are a contradiction to Rabbuna. The Gemara doesn't ask that from these Brises we see a contradiction to Rabbuna. Rabbuna would have a way of explaining these Brises according to his Shita. But we see, at least on the surface, they do fit better according to Rabbuna. Okay. We still have a few more minutes. Why don't we try to get closer to the end of the parrot? That way, maybe for once I'm up to Shabbos, we don't have to be, Okay. So, the Gemara tells the case. Tahu gavre de chavo fakina da ashkabta mechavre. A person once took as a mashkin a knife of ashkabta from somebody else. Rashi says ashkabta means a butcher shop. You use this knife to chop up meat. There's a couple of different other explanations among Rishonim. Ashkavta literally means
for butcher.
So ashkavta actually usually means passing away, like ashkavta the Rebbe.
Right.
So actually there are Mephoshim who explain that it means a shchita knife, like with that the animal is dying. And there's a different gear, such ashkavta, which means a knife that's used by leather workers, that's used by shoemakers. In which case, again, it would get into the machlokas of whether such a thing can be considered kelim shoytim ben echol nefesh or not. So, also the kamei d'Abaye, he came to Abaye, Amalei zila hadze, and Abaye tells him, go return it. to have a klisha open by ochel nefesh because it is a keli that's used for ochel nefesh. But talk kum b'din Allah, and then come to Beis Din. That's the point. In other words, again, we mentioned the Ran and other Rishonim say that even a kli umnus, if that's what you do for a living, is considered a keli shoytin by ochel nefesh. According to the Rishonim, who say that not. That's why Rashi is saying over here that this is a knife that's used for chopping up meat. So it's definitely oisin by an eifel nefesh, directly used for preparing food. So Abaye tells him, go return it, and then take him to Beis Din. If he agrees to you, or if you have edim, then he'll pay. And if not, then you'll make him swear a shavuot hefes. There's different explanations among the Rishonim, by the way. When he says go return it, does he mean this was because it was a keli shoisin by an eifel nefesh, it's invalid for you to have taken it as a mashkin, therefore return it? Or maybe what he means is fine. The diabet is considered a mashkin. However, since he needs it every day, then you have to return it to him, like we said before about returning the pillow or whatever. You still have to return it to him every day. Rav Amar
doesn't say when he says
ahadre, return it. Does it mean return it permanently? Right. You can't have taken it as mashkin to begin with, or does it just mean return it on a daily basis? Yeah. Rav Amar loy tzarach lemekim bedina. Rav says you don't have to go to Beis Din. Loy tzarach lemekim bedina Allah. You actually don't need to go to Beis Din for it, since you have it as a mashkin. And there are no edim, you took it as a mashkin, you have the ability to claim by a nigui that you bought it. This is the same as your question before about taking a mashkin, how you prove it. So in this case, okay, because you took it without edim.
Mashkin is not a proof.
No, okay. Usually a mashkin is a proof that there's a loan, but it could be in this case. Okay, you can claim that you bought it. Therefore, he has the ability to say in Beis Din that he's owed up to the value of the mashkin because he has it in his hands. So therefore, Rashi says, what we'll do is, suppose, for example, this mashkin is worth $100. He can go to Beis Din now and he can swear a shvuat ha-Torah, it says in Shulchan Aruch, not a shvuat tzedakah, but rather a shvuat ha-Torah, that he's owed up to $100, and he'll be able to collect on that basis. The question is, Abaya lesley ha-hi svara? Are you telling me Abaya doesn't agree with that svara? Maishna mehanu izli da'achli chushla bin ha-dah. How is it different than a case of goat?
Why are we asking Abaya?
We're asking that. Rava is saying that once he has it in his possession, then we believe him with a migui that he couldn't have bought it, that he bought it, that it is his, and therefore, if you want it back, pay me for it. Well, why doesn't Abaya agree with that svara? Why is Abaya telling him, return it, and then take him to Beis Din?
Another reason doesn't mean that...
No, but Maishna, Mehanu Izli Da'achli Chushla Ben Hadar, why is it any different than the case of goats that ate peeled barley in the Hadar? But also more the chushla v'tapaflu, the one who owned the barley came and grabbed a hold of these goats, the katoyin tova, and he was claiming they ate a lot. He was claiming actually that they ate more than they themselves are worth. But Amal Avor Deshmuel, and Avor Deshmuel said yochal litin ad kadei demeyan. He has the ability to claim up until the value of the goat. Same idea. He's muchzik in them, so therefore he can swear a shavur that he's owed that amount because he has a migur that.
Yeah. To the value of the mashkin.
Exactly. So why does Abaya not agree with that? Why is he telling him you have to return it to him and then take him to Beis Din for the whole debt? The answer is hasam lav midi da abdeloi shuli loy gurihu, because the difference is that goats are not something that are usually lent or rented out. Hasam midi da abdeloi shuli loy gurihu. Here we're talking about something which is usually lent or rented out. The knife that we were talking about. So we'll have to continue tomorrow with the details, but just briefly, most Rishonim learn like this. Let's start with the Rambam holds like this. Midad Abdullah Ushlu Leguri means something that to begin with is nobody buys it for their private use. You buy it l'chatchila in order to rent it or lend it out. The Rambam gives an example, a big pot. Like you would never use a pot that size to cook at home. You would use it for a simcha or something. In modern terms, I don't know, let's say like some of the centerpieces they have by weddings or by mitzvahs or whatever, that sort of thing. According to the Rambam, that's called dvarim hasurim lahashul lahashu, things which lahatchila are made specifically for the purpose of lending or renting out.
And therefore,
since it's something that's usually lented and left to rent it out, so even if you have it in your possession, it's not really a proof that it's yours. It's very likely the other guy lent it to you or the other guy rented it. That's why a buyer says you have to return it. As opposed to the case of the goats, goats are not something that a chila are made to lend or rent or whatever. Therefore, it's different. You do have, once you have them in your possession, there's a certain chazaka that they do belong to.
So a buyer could still agree.
So, right. Most other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that. They say that no, as long as it's something which is routinely, regularly lent out, then that's considered Dvarim Asur in Lahash Alahash. It doesn't have to be something which only, its only purpose in life is to be lent or rented out. Even if it's something which is typically lent or rented out, again, you'd have the same difference. This knife may not have been made Lahachila as something that's going to be lent out, but it is something that commonly will be lent or rented out, as opposed to goats are not. So again, a buyer would still hold that same distinction, and we'll finish up with it tomorrow.
But if you know they cut the goat.
If we know that he cut what?
No, he took the goat.
Oh, we don't know. We don't know. We know that he has the goats in his possession. He has a migra now. Yeah.
That's
toughest. Yeah, he grabbed a hold of them. Yeah.